Is it a movie? Film. Is it a movie? Film. 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 Film.
wondering why this episode is entitled Men in Black 2. Well, would you please direct your eyes over here? What is this, you ask? This, my friends, is a neutralizer. It's a gift for my friends from out of town. This will only take a second, and... Wow, I can't believe you guys all wrote in telling us you wanted something else besides Men in Black all month, and we totally agree. Welcome back to another episode of Film.
It's the podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film.
Yes.
I'm Nate, and I'm not interested in playing your silly games.
And I'm Terrell. And Effie, I'm tired.
Is that the color purple?
No.
Okay. I still haven't seen the color purple.
It's Dreamgirls.
Oh, okay.
Effie, we're tired. We're all tired.
Ah.
Yeah. It's actually sung. I didn't feel like singing, though.
It's okay.
Yeah. And yours is... where's yours from?
Small Axe Mangrove.
Oh. Wow. We just watched that.
Yeah. And my ears perked up when I heard that line, because the first time I watched it was before I saw today's feature, Lover's Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Feature or episode, depending on how you look at it. And as people who've seen Lover's Rock, or people who will hear about Lover's Rock, the song Silly Games, it's a pretty big moment.
Yeah, they're really big.
So when that comes up in Mangrove, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Easter egg.
Nice.
A little clever writing.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So yeah, we're doing Lover's Rock.
It's Black History Month.
And it's also going to be Valentine's weekend.
Yeah. So Lover's Rock.
Lover's Rock.
Let's do it. I'm excited. Before we do it, though, before we jump the gun.
Oh, yeah.
How about the rundown
of
what we've seen this past week?
Yeah. Do you want to start?
I will start. Sure. After Men in Black... The day after we recorded Men in Black, I guess the day it came out,
yeah,
we lost Christopher Plummer.
Mm-hmm. We did. R.I.P.
Yeah. Great actor. So I watched a movie that he was in called The Insider from 1999, directed by Michael Mann. Also starring Russell Crowe and Al Pacino, who play the two leads.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Plummer... is there. He's in the whole movie, but it's like you gotta wait 2 hours for his like two big moments.
Mm-hmm.
But he owns them.
Yeah.
Those two big moments. And it's a great movie anyway. I was very curious to see this. I guess other than Ali, which we covered on the podcast, all of the Michael Mann features I've seen were like focused around crime.
Mm-hmm.
Like organized crime or like violent crime. And The Insider is about 60 minutes, a piece on 60 minutes about the tobacco industry, like back when people didn't know that nicotine was terrible and all cigarette companies are evil.
Right.
So it was like a really big deal. And Russell Crowe plays the titular insider, who's got some info for 60 Minutes producer Al Pacino.
Interesting. Okay.
And... you know, Plummer plays the reporter. There's some good grandstanding. And, yeah, Michael Mann does his things. I picked up on something.
Mm-hmm.
He likes wet cars.
Wet cars?
It's a director trademark I picked up on about Michael Mann from watching enough of his stuff.
Okay.
He'll, like, get these cars, and then I guess someone on his production team, it's their job... to get them wet, because then he'll film like lights reflecting off the wet surface of a windshield or even just like the hood of the car.
Mm-hmm.
He loves that.
Interesting.
Just, I mean, his big thing is like light and mood, but and like masculinity. So it makes sense. It all comes together in that very Michael Mann shot of light reflecting on a car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's The Insider. Rest in peace, Christopher Plummer.
Nice. After Men in Black, we had a pretty nice double feature. which it was just like a really good night. I was like eating wings and drinking wine and just laughing up. I was just having a good time. And we watched The Black Hole, 1979, with Robert Forster on a recommendation from a coworker. And I really enjoyed it. I think I didn't enjoy it the way that it was intended to be enjoyed. Because it is like, I guess for its time, a very serious sci-fi movie, but watching it today, you watch it and you're just like, no way. Like, it's just.
Was really, it though? It's a Disney movie.
It's a Disney movie. And.
So how, I don't think serious? You can be a serious sci-fi Disney movie in, at least in 1979.
I don't know if they were going for the laugh.
Actually, no, I'm just going to say it. You still can't be a serious sci-fi Disney movie. I mean, now it's just, they actually own Star Wars, so now it's just real Star Wars instead of The Black Hole.
Yeah. But, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I
just Me too. Had
a really good time with it. Just, like, the things that they were trying to do with their robot characters, the things they were doing with their madman character, the casting of Robert Forster and Anthony Perkins, that was a nice nice catch to see them. I guess I haven't seen Anthony Perkins in anything besides Psycho. And this is like the youngest I've ever seen Robert Forster.
Yeah, he's great as like the archetypal space captain with that deep gravelly voice.
Yeah.
And I like a half hour in, I was just like, wait, he looks exactly like Archer. The character from the animated show Archer.
Yeah. And it's funny because Archer did the space thing, so it's just like really perfect. What's the deal with like a black hole leading you to hell? I feel like that pops up quite a bit. It's just like a black hole.
Because Christian society can't imagine nothingness that isn't their own punishment.
Okay.
I don't know. It's the mythology that people have. So when they think of the worst possible thing.
Yeah, it's hell.
They go straight to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe that's just how all black holes work.
Maybe. Stay away. And then the second feature, unless you have anything else to say about the black hole.
Well, I was just thrilled by the fact that it's so dinky.
Yes.
It's one of the dinkiest movies I've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the robots. They're,
Yeah, they look like South Park characters.
Yeah.
They look like South Park characters.
Like Awesome-O, right?
Yeah.
When Cartman was in a cardboard box.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretending to be a robot.
I was just like, wow, this is really just
But like the eyes are like fixed on. And then they have the two robots that are the same, but one got like damaged.
Yeah, one's beat up.
So then he has like a lower class affect. Like the one robot's British, and then the one that's beat up it's is like
Southern.
Yeah, he's got like the Southern thing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Disney. Disney stays Disney.
Yeah.
But I was thrilled by there's that element of it, which is very fun for a viewer in 2021 to watch. Like, we're in the actual future watching this dinky space movie. You just lost the comedy in there. But then also, the story's super moody. It's about a space crew that's got a black hole they might be going in. And there's a evil scientist that's been off in space by himself building these robots.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he could be a mad scientist. He seems pretty crazy.
Seems pretty hot, too.
There was an energy there.
There was an energy. I was feeling
it. He had the sexy evil beard
thing going on. Whatever Dr. Alex Durant was feeling, I was feeling it, too. I'm like, yes, let's go into a black hole together.
But, yeah, just that those two things, the moody tone and just the dinky presentation, they didn't really cancel each other out for me, which most to the time that would happen. Mm-hmm. Like when we watched Psycho Goreman last week,
mm-hmm.
that's also a dinky movie. And like it's moody a little bit, mostly in comedy though.
Yeah.
If that movie were trying to also be moody, I would have a hard time getting on board emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess just because of how large the character beats and like how villainous that villain was.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty well acted.
Yeah, it's like very theatrical in mm-hmm. The drama.
Mm-hmm.
But now we can talk about the movie. Like, I think midway through watching The Black Hole, I asked if you wanted to watch Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was right after. I was thinking about how I wanted to watch Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
So we followed it up with Labyrinth.
We watched Labyrinth. And it was my first time watching it. And the laughs continued. I mean, that was really great puppet work.
Oh, yeah. Jim Henson is the... master of puppets.
Yeah.
That's who Metallica was talking about.
Yeah.
When they sang Master of Puppets.
And, I enjoyed a lot about it. I enjoyed the puppets. I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed Jennifer Connelly. She was really good. Mm-hmm. It was like this very, like, dark, you know, Wizard of Oz type of feel to it. I, however, didn't react to David Bowie.
No reactions?
Like, no reaction.
He was most of the music.
Yeah.
That you said you liked.
Yeah.
Okay.
But outside of the music, I just didn't react to him.
Not even his bulge?
Because
goblins are at the height of his bulge because they're goblins.
Yeah, there was a moment where I was just like, what's happening here? Like,
you know what's happening.
Like,
there.
My eyes are just like...
He's Jareth the Goblin King and all the goblins are at the height of his...
Yeah.
Bulge.
Yeah. Also, was he... It's a kid's movie. Was he trying to seduce her?
Maybe.
Okay, so I was just like thrown
off. He's got energy.
I was thrown off by that as well.
It's David Bowie. You can never know.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, didn't enjoy him that much.
Okay.
Yeah. But everything else.
It was like my introduction to Bowie as just this out there
mm-hmm.
character.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty fond of him in mm-hmm. that. And I love the bulge.
And the bulge.
It's a significant part of that movie.
It's that outfit, that costume.
I wanted to watch more goblin stuff after Labyrinth. And it led me to a straight-to-video release, Scooby-Doo and the Goblin King. And I wanted to see who the Goblin King would be, because I just watched David Bowie, who I enjoy as Jareth the Goblin King.
Mm-hmm.
And this has the voice of Tim Curry as the Goblin King. Pretty much the only person that could follow up Bowie.
Yeah.
I mean, totally different character.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. It's not a great Scooby-Doo.
Okay.
But I love Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. So you enjoyed it.
And it's like a Halloween feel, and I haven't been in those spooky places with movies since Halloween, so that was fun. It felt festive.
All right.
And it got me on the free trial of the Boomerang streaming service, which has a bunch of Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So then I saw something else on their service they have, another Scooby-Doo video. Scooby-Doo and Batman, The Brave and the Bold, mm-hmm. from 2018. So I asked you, hey, want to watch Scooby-Doo and Batman?
He said, yeah.
Well, first he said, that's a thing?
That's a thing. I didn't know.
Apparently it was a thing in the 70s, too. I have to find that one.
Like the original cartoon? Or
yeah.
Okay.
They did a crossover cartoon before.
I think I remember that one, and Robin was there.
Yeah, it's like the old Batman and Robin. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this... I like this better than The Goblin King.
Mm-hmm.
Very satisfying crossover.
Yeah.
You get Batman doing Scooby-Doo stuff. You get the Scooby-Doo gang doing Batman stuff.
Yeah.
And there's this one scene where it like comes together so perfectly where it's this chase scene. So it starts off doing the Scooby-Doo thing where it's a chase in Arkham. Yeah. Yeah. And they're doing the Scooby-Doo thing where people go through one door and out the other door. And it's the hallway. And sometimes like Velma and Daphne run in one room and then the monster is already in that room. And then they switch around the chasing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes from that into a fight with the kaplow, bam, Batman stuff.
Yeah. The Batman's behind the whole time, taking down the bad guys as like the gang runs away.
Great synthesis of IP. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it, but I got sleepy towards the end.
Oh, you did?
I do not remember who was under the mask.
No!
I don't remember who was under the mask.
It was kind of convoluted.
Yeah. I know the Riddler was, like, in on it heavy. Like, he was a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably just the guy that Batman lost in the portal, right? Like, he just came back and humped him for letting...
It's not always what it seems.
Okay. Or it was Aquaman. I don't know. the way they write Aquaman is so consistent. It's very consistent.
Just a dork.
Yeah, just a dork. No one wants to be around.
Aquaman voiced by John DiMaggio, who's a Bender from Futurama. Yeah.
Nice. It's like...
He's just one of the all-time voice actors.
Yeah. Let's see. I watched Malcolm and Marie, which came out this year.
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch that.
You didn't watch it.
Can I quickly tell the story about me not watching that?
Because
I meant to. I was excited.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then I asked you to watch it the day it came out. And you said, tomorrow. And I said, okay, fine. I can wait. And then it turned out I couldn't wait because... damn Letterboxd. So many of the people I follow on that app watched Malcolm and Marie the day it came out and left very negative reviews. And I know the movie's kind of about negative reviews.
It is.
So I'm interested to hear your take on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was convinced not to bother.
All right. So I think you should watch it.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, I think you should watch it.
Go back and watch it.
I get the criticism, although I didn't read anything about it, but I feel like the biggest criticism would probably be that it is maybe just a bit tedious and like repetitious and it's like structure.
Do you want me to tell you what I saw that made me not want to watch it?
Go ahead.
Just that this guy, writer-director Sam Levinson, son of a successful Hollywood figure, Barry Levinson, wrote this super self-indulgent script. He got a bad review for his last movie and took it out in this script by writing these two black characters and then making it about, like, black filmmakers when it's just his own grievances. Like thinly veiled grievances as a white filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought that was pretty whack.
Okay.
And just that it was black and white and pretentious and the jazz music just to like seem cool.
Right. I mean, I guess.
That's what I read. And I was like, do I want to watch that movie?
I guess that's all like. All like, I understand all of that critique. That's one way to look at it. Or, I don't know. You could just enjoy the performances.
Right.
I think the performances are really great. It really gives, Zendaya and, JDW like a lot to chew on. And they do a lot of chewing. They do a lot of eating in this. It is just like a up, down, up, down, up, down. You see it coming, but it's still like intriguing to watch. And just from a actor's standpoint, it was just really meaty in the monologue department. It's just where they just got to like really perform these monologues at each other.
Yeah.
And just there's just like... I don't want to spoil it, but just like this really good knife scene. If you watch it, you'll get to it. And it's this really good knife scene
that
Zendaya gets to do. That's really good. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could look at it as a bit pretentious. It is black and white. There's jazz music. There is...
I have nothing against black and white or jazz. In fact, there's... I can think of a couple of black and white jazz films that I quite enjoy.
But yeah, I mean, just take it in, watch it for the performances.
I'm not good at that. You're very good at that.
Oh,
I don't know, taking aside anything else and just honing in on performances.
Yeah,
because you're an actor, I guess.
Yeah,
you're maybe able to just focus on that. I like words.
You like words. It's a lot of words.
I like words with meaning.
I do need to watch it again because it was just like a lot being thrown, a lot of like, you know, complex situations and just like, you know, the turbulences of a toxic relationship. But on my first watch, I did enjoy it. I really did enjoy it. And I was just like, oh, nice. Okay, so I don't know what everyone... I hear what people are talking about, like what you just said.
I don't want to take that away from you.
But I did enjoy it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And it's really nice to have like Malcolm Marie, One Night in Miami, and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. All within like a month, I want to say, of just like these like... what feels like, because Malcolm Marie is not a theater piece, but it feels like theater in the way that it's written. Like it feels like
It was made in quarantine.
Yeah, it could be
another reason why I was hesitant, because I don't know about quarantine created media.
Yeah, yet. But it's not about the quarantine.
I know,
it's not
like
lockdown or anything.
But like you'll be thinking, oh, I know why they're only in this one apartment.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I'll watch it maybe eventually. I'm not in a rush, though.
Okay, I'll watch it with you. I'll watch it again.
I'm not in a rush.
It's okay.
You haven't, like, fully talked me into seeing it. I'll watch it in, like, a couple months when I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that movie that I didn't see yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else did you watch?
Love and Basketball.
Ooh, you watched Love and Basketball?
Yes.
Oh,
it was
shit.
My first time watching it.
Nice.
I wanted to get some... black romance in this week.
Oh, that reminds me. I wanted to watch Love Jones.
That was on my list also. I didn't get there.
I'll get there.
So I enjoyed The Old Guard that came out last year from Gina Prince-Bythewood.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Netflix movies. And I know that was a big departure from her usual output, which is more romance rather than action.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess she also did Secret Life of Bees. But Love and Basketball, what a debut feature.
Yeah.
And like what... I watched Space Jam. I didn't even mention last week that I watched Space Jam. But that's a basketball movie. But this is a much better basketball movie.
Yeah. Way more heart.
And the romance is just great.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't expecting it to be so, what's the word I'm looking for? Not like ambitious, but like it covers a lot of time in these two characters' lives. I thought it was like a high school or a college movie.
No, from childhood to
but,
like,
yeah, no, it's like
career.
The love of my life, and we get to see the life and the love in the ball.
In the ball, yeah. Love and Basketball of it all.
Sanaa Lathan as Monica is such a great character and performance.
Mm-hmm.
There's this moment, And I knew what I was watching when I turned it on, but I got my hopes up because I'm a sucker. There's this one moment in the beginning where she like comes out to her mom. Her mom like is pestering her about she doesn't, because of the way she dresses.
She's a tomboy.
Well, yeah, that's because I'm a lesbian. And then her mom gives her a look. And then it's like, oh, yeah, it's she's the lead of this heterosexual romance movie. Yeah.
So that's not it.
Yeah, no. Lesbians don't factor into this movie that prominently features women's basketball. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, tomboys are a thing.
Tomboys are a thing.
I mean, it's still, even if it doesn't get into... lesbianism or anything queer, it still has some interesting stuff to say about gender roles and presentation.
Yeah, and it's a real cool cast too. I mean, Sanaa Lathan, Omar Apps, Regina,
Kyla Pratt plays Sanaa as a young woman,
Regina,
Alfre Woodard,
Gabrielle Union, Tyra Banks. There's so many people that pop up in this in that picture.
Boris.
Yeah.
Boris Kodjoe's in there.
Yeah, he's in there. Mr. Kodjoe. Yeah, that's a classic.
Oh, great soundtrack also.
That's a classic. I mean, yeah, that soundtrack, that last song that they play to when they play for like
that
each
ending.
Other's heart. Yeah.
That's like every great romance movie has like a big romantic gesture, but the way it factors into this one. Let's just say there's love and basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really great moment.
Yeah, that's on Hulu and HBO Max for anyone who, like me, has missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Catch up. With me.
Yeah. The last thing I watched, I would say in preparation for Lovers Rock this week, is Mangrove, which is the first episode of Small Axe.
Yeah, or the first feature in the series of features. Mm-hmm. However you want to look at it.
Yeah. Mangrove. 2 hours of joy and pain.
Yeah.
What's her name? Latia?
Letitia.
Letitia Wright. Amazing performance. Sean Parks, amazing performance. Just like,
are you going to go down the list?
What's her name? Rashinda Sindo, great performance. Jack Loden, great performance. All of them. Mr. Kirby, great performance.
Yeah.
Really great story. I don't know if I've ever seen a story of, the strife that Black people and the UK face. I don't know if I've ever seen that on film.
Right.
So it was good to see, and it was tough to see. Just like the similarities across the world, and just like the corruption of the police force, and just people that are just trying to live their life and find moments of joy.
I mean, it kind of Britain's the heart of colonialism that swept the globe.
And although it was hard to watch, I really want to just credit, I guess, Steve McQueen and just everyone who worked on it and wrote it, that found those moments of joy and celebration, like the carnival, like those scenes are just like really important, just, and like they're long scenes too, like it really just lingers on the joy, because like what's coming next is about to like fuck you up. You know, the cops are up to something while they're having a good time.
Yeah, I was really happy about those scenes, especially revisiting it. Because I got to be honest, I forgot about all of those. All I remembered was the violence and then the trial.
Mm-hmm.
But the gold is in those moments.
The gold is in those moments.
And the courtroom dramas.
Oh, the courtroom
played
dramas
just
is great.
Perfectly.
It's so...
And he indulges in all of like traditional courtroom drama stuff.
The wigs,
but not
the dresses.
Well, yeah, it is a true story and it's period accurate. But I just mean like in the like just the that genre, just the conventions of like people one-upping each other and, oh wait, the trial's in session, but then someone figures out some detail that is the smoking gun.
Yeah.
And he indulges in that, but not in a way where the movie ever feels like you know where it's going or that it's like just trotting a familiar ground.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's such a good story, true story, that I'm surprised it took this long to be told.
Right.
Just the defendants representing themselves, that's such a...
That was brilliant.
Like, if it weren't a true story, it would be like, that's how you're going to write it?
Yeah.
Because, that's a great way to get your characters to be able to speak for themselves. There's a line in there where Letitia says, the best way to represent ourselves is by self-representing ourselves.
Yeah. And they got to cross-examine. Yeah. Like, they got to, like, be like, no. Wait. I was there. I know this to be true. I was really nervous, but it did really work out for them.
Mm-hmm.
I love their crazy white boy lawyer. And also, just, like, there was just, like, this one guy on the jury.
Oh, this... Okay. I gotta say, genius. Period detail. This court case was in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But Steve McQueen is so... I feel like most people would just have, okay, it's 70s. But Steve McQueen realizes the 60s were very powerful for the culture, especially in Britain. There would be a guy on the jury that's still stuck in the 60s.
Yeah.
And he is very loudly still stuck in the 60s with his fluorescent pocket squares and long, colorful suits and just like generally empathetic look.
Yeah.
Like you can just tell he's listening.
He's listening. Yeah. He's leaning forward.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at the nine, you know, and like that moment where they're about to give like the verdict.
Yeah.
And then like the camera swipes the jury and he just has this smirk on his face and you already know that he's about to fuck it up. And then they all get that not guilty. And it's just like, it's such a good payoff. And just like, I really appreciate the verdict reading with like the zoom in just on what's his name? Frank?
Yeah.
Frank's face as he's like crying and he's realizing like what's happening now. He put his trust in God and he just let the dice fall where they may. And it just worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say Steve McQueen's the only director that could make me cry with just a colander. Mm-hmm. But I will say he's the only director that has made me cry with just a colander.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Small Axe, everyone.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon Prime.
And that was the last thing I watched this week.
I watched something else, but I think we might get to it another time. Okay. It's something I'm gonna watch again with you, but you don't know it yet.
Okay.
So let's hear some Lovers Rock. Lovers Rock is a 2020 romance directed by Steve McQueen. It's so much more than a romance, though.
Yeah.
2020 romance directed by Steve McQueen, co-written by McQueen and Corshin Newland. And this ain't your daddy's Steve McQueen. Just to remind folks. Something I want to get in the habit of doing since we've now done over 100 episodes.
Yeah.
We have quite a backlog. Just to put the things we cover into a context of things we've already covered.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out Widows, we did an episode on, directed by Steve McQueen. Also, the editor of Lovers Rock also worked on Slumdog Millionaire. Oh, okay. Which has some nice editing. I forget the guy's name. He also did Edgar Wright's first two movies. So, pretty good editor.
Yeah. He is.
Lover's Rock. We already talked about this on the podcast. I was way through the Small Axe series, and I saw the second one, Lover's Rock, and I was like, you gotta watch this.
Yeah.
And you watched it, and you're like, why did he tell me to watch it? And then you kept watching, and you're like, you watched it again.
Yeah, I'm like, there it is.
You've seen it more than me now.
Yeah.
It's Lover's Rock. Nothing we say will spoil much, but if you haven't seen it, it's only 70 minutes.
Yeah,
you should. This podcast is probably going to be longer than that.
Yeah.
Just watch it. It's a party.
Yeah. Yeah, Lover's Rock ended up on my top 10 last year, and it would probably be, if I ranked it, probably be number one, and probably be at number one.
Yeah, if I had ranked mine, I cheated and just included Small X as a whole, and I think, that was my top.
Yeah.
My top thing.
I just want to talk about it. Let's just...
Did you know about Lover's Rock?
What do you mean?
Like the genre?
I mean, I know the music, but I didn't know like the title.
Me neither. Rock, yeah, this was the first time I had heard.
Yeah. But, that's all. I didn't know. I didn't know.
I'm just grateful that I learned.
Yeah. When I was a kid, my mom used to work at a hair salon. As a lot of Jamaicans employed there, and so I was like immersed in the culture when I was a kid, but like it was like kind of like at a superficial level. It was nice to watch this and then be taken back to that, and also just be taken back to when I was a kid and we used to throw like house parties like this.
I didn't see any kids at this party.
No kids.
Which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
For this party. Okay, trains. We start with the trains. Clacking. Not entirely sure why that's our opening thing, our opening shot.
Yeah.
But I did write in my notes, trains are just industrial Congo lines, if you think about it.
It is late night, and a woman is sneaking into the house. Yeah.
She was sneaking in?
She was sneaking in.
Okay, that makes sense. I was a little confused, because it was Martha,
yeah, correct? It was Martha.
I wrote that she was sneaking out, but then the next shot is the daytime, then preparing the party.
Yeah.
So that's just our introduction to Martha as someone who has to sneak out.
And sneak in,
yeah. And sneak in. She's a sneak because of her house.
Yeah.
That she lives in.
And now it's daytime in the next scene. There's a bunch of men clearing out a house, moving couches, moving rugs, you know, making space for something else.
Yeah.
And there are also women in the kitchen cooking up, preparing food for whatever is about to go down.
They're making goat curry. And they're singing and dancing,
silly games, a cappella.
Only one of them hits the high note.
Yeah, though. Really going for that high note.
And then she gets a look from the others.
Yeah.
When she does it, they're like, oh.
And they're just having a good time. And then they bring in the speakers. They're setting up for what I imagine is a party.
Why are you saying it like that?
I'm speaking as if we're not there yet. We're not at the party yet. So we don't know what's happening. they're setting up for a party. They're getting their speakers set up.
As they unload the sound system, there's a very quick shot of these two white blokes, I guess, because they're in England, staring at our characters from across the street with some disdain. Something that stands out about Lover's Rock in the context of Small Axe is that we talked about the moments of joy in Mangrove. But a lot of it is people being tested and the resilience. But in Lover's Rock, the ratio is flipped.
Yeah.
All the other ones, they have those moments of joy, little pockets. But this is the party with little moments of tension.
Yeah. That's true.
But I like that it's not... One, I like that it's not the focus at all.
Mm-hmm.
But also that it's not ignored.
There. Yeah, that's still there. Yeah. And it's part of the same story that he's trying to tell with small acts.
Mm-hmm.
So 17-year-old Cece is upstairs getting ready with her friend Grace.
Mm-hmm.
I said Cece. Well, they call her Cece. Her full name is Cynthia. And it's her birthday.
Yeah, I love this moment. They're setting everything up with the sound system. And there's like a series of close-ups. And they're going to do a sound check. But even before the needle drops and starts playing the music...
Mm-hmm.
I was just really appreciating the sound design in this with the just, it's a series of close-ups of like cables being plugged into the system and you like hear the satisfying like sound it makes. Yeah. And the people walking, it's a hardwood floor because they rolled up the rugs.
Mm-hmm.
Just like people's footsteps on that and the sound of paper of the records as they're being rifled through.
Mm-hmm.
And then the needle drops.
And then the needle drops.
And so, and that's when Lover's Rock really begins, because mm-hmm. that's when you get to hear some Lover's Rock.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the music is playing and the food is cooking. We get close-ups of all that food, all that stew chicken, all that curry, all of it.
Yeah, and we see there's a little focus on these signs made with construction paper mm-hmm. that are just taped to the walls outside the kitchen that just say goat curry. And drinks sold here.
Yeah.
And just you get a sense of the community and the homemade party. It's a house party.
It's a house party. And that's how you throw a house party.
But it's a homely house party.
Yeah. You got the dance floor and then you got some food to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Eh?
It's not just a dance floor though, because you've got a DJ. You got Samson here.
Mm-hmm.
He's sound checking. He's going to be in an empty room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm saying it, like, it will happen now.
There you go.
I went even further. He will find himself in an empty room. with just the same amount of energy that he'll have once it's full.
Yeah.
Because he just seems like that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Watch more of Small X in Alex Weedle, the fourth one, you'll get a little more into the culture of running a sound system.
I have more to watch. So now it's nighttime and we meet Patty, who is like sitting on like a jungle gym or some sort.
Yeah, it's a playground swing mm-hmm. thing.
And she's smoking and she's singing to herself, and then Martha, who we saw earlier, walks up on her and she's just like, blow, you know, like, check out my dress, check out my mm-hmm. shoes, check out my hair. And she's just like, ooh, yeah, girl, you look good. And then she's just like, but your shoes. She's like, what, did I scratch them? She's like, no, you know,
she said, you don't wear church shoes to a party like this.
Yeah, to a blues party.
To a blues party,
to
yeah.
To a blues party.
And then the shot switches to a wide shot, and you see that this playground that they were on was under an overpass, and there's a bus passing the overpass, and that's their bus, so they've got to run. And it calls back to a couple shots in Mangrove that show children playing in just around Notting Hill.
Mm-hmm.
In like their play doesn't like the playgrounds. If no, first in Mangrove, it's like a construction site that they're playing in.
Yeah,
and then you see one little like rusty playground that's underneath highways.
Yeah, it's like they're building over this community.
This recalls that. Yeah,
yeah. And so they're conversing, having a good time, and then the bus passes, and they're just like, bus. And, you know, mm-hmm. they gotta run to the bus. And so...
Cool 1980s bus ticket taker gadget.
Yeah, I've never seen
they, it. They that probably before. Had to rent that from a museum or something.
Yeah.
Patty and Martha walking, approaching the house.
Mm-hmm. There's a man
Clifton.
And a pay box. They call it a pay box. Not a pay box, a phone box.
It's a phone booth.
It's a phone booth.
And he's stealing quarters.
He's stealing quarters out of it. And he sees Martha and Patty walk into the party. They get in for free, too, because they're ladies. And all the guys behind them have to pay. Classic.
And now I get to see the DJ Samson in his element.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I lied when I said it was the same energy. He had a lot of energy in the sound check, but... Mm-hmm. When you're getting energy from your audience and then giving back more, it's more.
Yeah.
Just the, like, the rhyming, like, in between lines of a different song over the song. It's, you got to be good to pull that off, and he does it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, yeah, the party is getting started, and, you know, there's a small crowd dancing. The birthday girl is there with her friend, Grace. They're dancing. And then enter Patty and Martha.
Yeah.
And
who are they?
Who are they,
that,
right?
That little moment.
Instant. Because Martha does nothing but gets the attention of this man who comes up to her and tries to, you know, make conversation really quickly. But I guess Cynthia... had her eyes on this man, and so now she has her eyes on Martha. Like, who is she, and who does she think she is coming into my birthday party, stealing my man? She's already, like, on that, like, wavelength with Martha. But she's just, you know, keeping it with her friend.
The man was Bammy, right?
Yeah, it's Bammy.
Yeah, he's got a very nice suit on.
Yeah.
Very flashy.
And that hat.
Yeah, how would you describe that hat?
It's kind of like a bowl hat.
Okay,
It's kind of like a bowl hat. It's big, but it sits on his afro, and it's cocked to the side.
Yeah.
So it's like styled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we hear a siren, which this is the only episode in the anthology where that's not a terrible thing. Because it's just the transition in between records.
Yeah.
And Samson says, I don't think you're ready for this one. And he was telling the truth because, viewer, you are not ready for this one.
Yeah.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Everybody. Everybody in that room.
Just delightful that dance
energy,
fighting.
Like that buildup when like before the drop happens and you're just like anticipating, everyone's getting into their kung fu poses, you know what I mean? They're about to like chop it up, and then that beat drops, and it's just a madhouse in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I first watched this, I was just like, wait, so like they can't transition between songs? Like they can't.
They don't have a fader.
They don't have a fader. They just ring the alarm, and that's the end of the song. Next song. But yeah, the kung fu fighting scene is like just a great. It's like it's like the first sweet moment, really.
And it's like the only time I can think of ever hearing that song being used not in a way. Not in an overtly racist way. Mm-hmm. Not in a way that's like, this is a dumb song, listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's completely genuine. We're just dancing and fighting, having a good time.
Yeah.
We get a peep at the backyard where everyone's smoking and eating. And we get to see where that one couch ended up.
Yeah.
It's in the backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like a real chill vibe outside. So yeah, Patty and Martha back inside are enjoying themselves in the hallway, like singing a little song, and this is where they meet Reggie
and Franklin. Yeah, Reggie hits on Patty.
Yeah,
pretty aggressively.
Mm-hmm. But they are just like, "Can you get away from us, man? Like we don't want your attention." Yeah, that's not why we're here tonight.
But then Franklin comes in and apologizes for his friend and is very smooth.
He's very
smooth. Handsome and has a really cool pattern on his shirt.
Yeah. He's smooth, but not too
smooth. Actually,
it's not
even a pattern. It's just a design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he kind of saves the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they all like end up going back outside and they,
on the couch.
On the couch, they're sitting on the couch, and Martha and Franklin are kind of hitting it off.
Yeah, like talking about what music they like.
Mm-hmm, they're actually communicating, but the on the other side, mm-hmm. Reggie and Patty are not saying a word to one another.
No.
Yeah, there's nothing happening there.
So it's bad news when Franklin asks Martha to dance, leaving Patty and Reggie on the couch.
Yeah.
She's not happy. Pushes Reggie's arm off of her.
Yeah. Walks away. So, yeah, Martha and Franklin are going to go for a dance. And so Martha is dancing with Franklin. And Cynthia is just like, again, who does she think she is?
Yeah, and then even Samson on the mic says, he shouts out, "I see you, Franklin."
Yeah. And then Lonely Girl starts to play.
Yeah.
And everyone starts to like pair off.
And there's a line in the song about holding hands.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's the easy shot to do, but it makes sense. This is what people do when you hear that song in this context. You grab someone's hand.
Yeah.
You get a couple shots of hands grabbing each other.
Mm-hmm. So Cynthia's friend, Grace, gets pulled. And so she starts to dance with a man. And a man approaches Cynthia to dance, and she is just really aggressive, like, mm-hmm. "Get away from me. Like, is there something wrong with your eyes? Like, get away." Yeah. This happens twice. She turns down two men that want to dance with her, and she ends up just, like, on the wall.
Yeah.
Arms folded.
I don't know what character this note is in reference to.
Mm-hmm.
All of them at some point in the party. Just the full unabashed butt grab while dancing with your partner.
Oh yeah, it's just a close up of some hands on some buns.
Yeah,
it doesn't even matter who it is.
Not to the viewer. Yeah.
Yeah, not to the viewer.
No, yeah. I mean, as long as people are cool with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, go there, for it.
There's a lot of bumping and grinding that's gonna be happening.
If it's
throughout
that
the night.
Scene and everyone's consenting,
mm-hmm.
Nate approves. Not that. any of this needs Nate's approval.
So yeah, Lonely Girl's playing and Cynthia's a lonely girl. But shortly after, Martha and Franklin, they leave the room, but we stay in the room for the bit.
Break.
And that's where we see like the close-ups of like hip to hip and mm-hmm. hands on butts and necks and faces and necks and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we cut back to Reggie and Patty on the couch briefly. Mm-hmm. Now there's an even bigger space between them on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
He realizes that he's got no chance with her.
Yeah, he's like, "Why did you come? Like, if you like, you're not having a good time, so why are you here?"
Yeah, so he gets up and sucks his teeth.
Yeah, lots of teeth sucking.
That's what I put in my notes. I wanted to take this moment to talk about the versatility of the tooth suck.
Mm-hmm. It's just like a very West Indian thing to like suck your teeth. And just like, it's in Mangrove a lot and it's in this one a lot too.
And it can say so many different things. It can say, "Who the fuck do you think you are?"
Yeah.
It can say, "Don't you know who I am?"
Yeah.
It can say,
"You're being too
much. I'm bored. You're being too much."
It could be playful or it could be like life threatening.
Never mind. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna.
Are we appropriating?
Not team sucking. So Martha is waiting in the bathroom line.
Behind her is Bammy.
Yeah, Bammy comes up behind her, and he is extra smooth, like gross, like ugh, like you're too slimy.
I'd say rough, the opposite of smooth.
He's the opposite, and he's just like, "Yo, you want a gentleman? Well, I'm a gentleman," and you know, mm-hmm. what I mean, like, "What's your daddy call you?" Like, he's just like running game, and she's just like, "Oh God, I've like heard this before. Like, you sound like one of my dad friends or something." And she's just like, "No, go away," again. And she tries to enter the bathroom, and then he tries to enter it.
He tries to follow her.
Inside, and she has to push him away twice.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, like, slams the door in his face.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where you can see Bammy's, like, ego is bruised.
Mm.
Because then he, like, has to, like, take it out on the innocent bystanders.
Yeah.
Who are just, like, sitting there in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, you think that's funny? Like,
yeah. While going to the bathroom, Martha looks out the bathroom window and sees her friend Cynthia leaving.
Mm-hmm. So she has to make this a very quick bathroom break so she can run out and get her friend.
Yeah, tries to meet up with her, but there's the white guys have multiplied.
Yeah, there's more
from white before. Guys. There's more of them now.
Yeah,
and they're catcalling Martha.
Is it a catcall? Because they're kind of like mocking her. They're like making monkey noises at her. Is it a catcall?
It's a harassment.
It's a harassment
for sure.
They're harassing her. And they start to approach her, and so she's walking back to the party, and then she runs into the bouncer, who is just like this big man.
Yeah, scares off the guys.
Scares off the guys by just looking at them. Like, they're not going to take him on, so they just like, let's get out of here.
Yeah, just like in terms of the sound mix, that moment's punctuated by the sound of the sirens as the sound system is once again switching songs.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, back at the party, the lovers are rocking. Like, they're still dancing very closely. Cynthia has finally let a man dance with her.
Oh, sorry. I said Cynthia left earlier. I meant Patty left.
Patty left, yes.
Yeah.
Cynthia, the birthday girl, is dancing with a man, but her entire focus is on Bambi, who's on the wall. Who's only kind of half paying attention to her.
Yeah.
But she's just like, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. And so Martha is going to leave the party because her friend left and she doesn't know anyone here anymore.
But Franklin meets back up with her.
Yeah. And
kind of convinces her to stay.
Yeah, stops her from leaving. You know, pulls her around like, hey, let's have another dance.
Yeah, like, she briefly negs him by making fun of his heavily scented aftershave. And she calls him Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, like, you smell really strong. But he pulls her into the room and then silly games starts to play.
Yeah, right in time for Samson to shout out birthday girl Cynthia. They give her an applause.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess, her special song is Silly Games.
And so, the party's in full swing at this point. Bammy finally picks Cynthia to dance with.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start to dance. Martha and Franklin are dancing. Everyone is dancing.
Really just, definitive slow dance. Yeah. The slowest, most sensual dancing.
Yeah. It's like they're pushing on each other so hard to become one. There's just like this like real grind happening, and the song
is essentially their clothing is preventing them from fucking.
Yes, essentially. The song Silly Games is a really good song. It's an interesting song because I feel like it's a song that you could dance to, like actually like upbeat dance to, but everyone is just like dancing really really slow to it. Like they're just like vibing to it in like a different way.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because the beat of the song is slow, and then the melody, like you could take it double time and dance that way, but they're going by the bass.
Yeah.
Even though the couples are doing this super sensual slow dance, the singles aren't left out. They're still jamming.
Oh yeah, it's like a group of girls that are just like, "This is my song. Like I don't care. Like in fact, don't come." Near me, because this is my song, this is my moment. So yeah, there are a few girls in there that are just their fists are tight, their eyes are closed, they're smiling, like they're just having the time of their lives in this moment. And like Bammy and Cynthia and Franklin and Martha are just like grinding.
Yeah, eventually we see Bammy and Cynthia leaving, going off together somewhere.
Yeah, towards the end of the song. I really love
the end of the song, but then the song stops and it continues because now we're going a cappella.
Yeah. I love this really small detail of like the camera showing the wall sweat.
Yeah. The wall is sweating.
That's how you know you're at a good party. Like you're having a good time because everyone is like really hot and dancing. And there's like the humidity in the room is just at an all-time high that the wall is sweating.
Yeah, the Lover's Rock is done so well with all these touches that just really put you in that room and that moment in history.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, and like, okay, so like the first thing that wowed me about this scene is that they played the whole song. They didn't cut. And just like how it stayed, it went around the room, but it stayed on Martha and Franklin. And like you could see like that spark happening.
Yeah.
You could see it happening. You could see them looking at each other. You could see them just grinding. The song didn't even matter at that point. And then just like, so the song ends, right? And it goes into a cappella. And it's a full a cappella version of the song.
Yeah.
Like the whole song over again.
And they're the sound of their feet on the floor as they're dancing is what's keeping the beat for the a cappella of them just all singing. And I have to shout out this one guy, the old timer with the fedora and the mustache and the deep baritone voice really anchoring the a cappella, because without him, it would just be all high pitched.
Yeah, you get some range, some levels there.
That high note in that song,
yeah, is really
that you come back to and back to. It's something.
Yeah, and someone was really going for it. It was really hitting it. It made people giggle. It's like it felt just like a genuine moment.
And like as it goes on and on, the singing gets more harmonious. Like everyone was singing the melody at the beginning, but towards the end, people are doing their own thing, styling, harmonizing. Guess how long the silly game scene is?
It gotta be like 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's 11 minutes.
It's 11 minutes?
Yeah.
It's a really great scene.
Yeah. 11 minutes of a 70-minute movie is silly games. That's more than 10%.
When I first saw this, I was completely in like awe at just how I was being held. Because the way like my mind works is just like, okay, you cut to something else now. And it's just like, no, you actually just stay, you sit in this moment.
Yeah.
This moment's really important. You just stay right here.
I was Steve McQueen's very good at the lingering camera. I mean, I talked about that Colander and Mangrove, but in all his movies, he always knows when to just be still. And just the value in that. So now Silly Games has ended. We see Bammy walking Cynthia through the backyard and Cynthia asking where he's taking her.
And it was at that moment that I was just like, ugh, this is not going to end well.
What? The guy that tries to force himself into bathrooms with women?
Yeah.
Isn't going to be respectful of women?
It's funny, too, because when I first saw him, I was just like, oh, he's really hot. Like, he's a really attractive guy. But as the story went on, I've got less and less
he's attracted bad news. To
him. I'm just like, holy crap. So inside, the lovers are still rocking.
Yeah, it's now like, it's a
different song.
Tell me what you think of me, baby.
And it's just more shots of people dancing and grinding around the room.
It's actually not more shots. It's one shot.
It's one shot?
It's just a single shot. Room, right? The camera goes in this fluid motion all the way around the room, like focusing on each couple, like look at this couple, now we're going over here. And we eventually land on, of course, Franklin and Martha,
who are in the cut, in the corner.
Yeah, we saw a bunch of very sensual couples dancing, and then we finally get to Franklin and Martha, and it's like, this is love that's just starting. Yeah. Like we're watching it begin.
We're watching it
just blossom. Like the big bang of romance.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're just like, just like tucked away in their own little corner. Sparks. Grinding.
And now we see CT or Clifton, the man from, what'd you call it? Phone room?
Phone box?
Phone box.
Yeah, the phone box.
Phone box guy.
Phone room?
He
wants into the party, but I don't think he has enough money.
So. Yeah, the bouncer doesn't want to let him in, but then
He starts to make a scene.
There's some shouting, and then there's a squad car outside. So the bouncer lets him in.
Yeah, pulls him in.
For shelter.
Yeah, and it's just like, hey, yo, keep it cool. Like, if you're not cool, it's going to be me and you. Do you understand me? Me and you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's like, man, get off me with your hot breath. He's just like relentless and just like his attitude. Martha, she is like, oh, hey, that's my cousin. Like,
yeah,
cool. Also.
Yeah. Now Martha is someone else she knows at the party.
Yeah. But he is not happy with her.
No, they don't seem to have a great relationship.
No. CT mother passed. Mm-hmm. I want to say a little more than a week ago.
Hmm.
And Martha hasn't been around. She's been pretty distant recently. And he's just upset that, you know, she hasn't come to be like, hey, what's up? Like, what's going on? Like, how are you feeling? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. And this is like their first time meeting.
Yeah. And the argument gets into Clifton mentioning, like, how many times has your dad beat your mom?
Yeah. It gets pretty deep and personal.
Yeah, we get a sense of their family dynamics,
mm-hmm.
which is tense for Martha. So it leads to her going outside to catch her breath, have a smoke, have some auditory flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
The camera stays on Martha's face, but we just hear like arguing, mm-hmm. which is implied to be her thinking about her parents.
Mm-hmm.
But then it
turns out
whoever did the sound mix for this does have a fade, because it fades from the what's in her mind to the arguing of Cynthia and Bammy. Mm-hmm. Not arguing, actually.
Yep.
Rape in progress.
Yes. Bammy is forcing himself onto Cynthia, who is begging him to stop. And Martha throws her cigarette butt onto Bammy, and he gets up because he's a fashionista, so he can't have burn marks on his suit.
No, a very expensive suit.
Yeah, and so he gets real aggressive with her, and she does not back down. She gets real aggressive back with him.
And she picks up a glass shard.
Yeah, she's just like, I want her over here with me. Come over here mm-hmm. with me, sister. And he almost doesn't let her. And then she grabs that knife. I mean, not knife, that glass shard.
Glass shard, yeah.
Holds it up to his neck and is just like, come with me.
Gets her to safety. Cynthia runs off. Mm-hmm. And Martha gets in Bammy's face.
Mm-hmm.
Cuts him a little bit on the cheek.
A little nick.
Or the neck.
Mm-hmm.
A little neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then Franklin comes out.
Yeah, just in the nick of time.
To just have Martha's back in that moment to make sure Bammy doesn't do anything else.
Yeah, like, hey, what are you going to do? Back down. And so Bammy goes back into the party.
Mm-hmm.
They actually all go back into the party.
And now we have the scene I have dubbed the dub scene.
The dub scene.
Because it's the dub song.
Yeah, the vibe has changed mm-hmm. along with the introduction of CT.
Yeah.
Really.
He's jamming.
He is jamming. He's jamming, and he takes Bammy's drink.
Yeah.
And Bammy's like looking around for his drink, and he's just like, he wants to approach someone, but also he doesn't want to lose his cool.
Yeah.
He's all about the cool. And so he's just going to let it go. He's just going to let it go.
Yeah.
And CT has his drink, and he's just vibing really hard mm-hmm. on the dance floor. Just like completely like shaking things up.
Yeah. He's skanking.
He's skanking?
Yeah, it's that dance.
Is that what that is?
That I used to do at ska concerts.
He's skanking.
Yeah. And then eventually there's a mosh pit.
Yeah.
Just interesting to see what I presume to be origins of popular concert dances that have been bastardized by the appropriation of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like moshing and skanking.
Yeah. And so he's vibing really hard. He's changing up the vibe on the dance floor, and like the guys behind the DJ booth are taking note. Mm-hmm. And so they like, hey, you want to smoke? They give him a smoke.
Yeah, to get him to chill.
Yeah, they give him to chill out a little bit. And then they give him the mic so he can put that energy out into the floor.
Yeah. What a moment.
What a moment. You know, that I remember talking about this and I was just like, you know, CT could have came into the party hot and he could have got into a fight with anybody. But they turned it into to something else. They let that aggression out on the dance floor.
Yeah, you take that energy and you direct it somewhere positive.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he starts, like, just, like, not rapping and not just and not even really hyping up. He's just, like, speaking into the mic.
Yeah.
He's just speaking into the music and everyone is just vibing. And then
we want to talk about vibes. Meanwhile, upstairs. Cynthia, who's recovering from a very traumatic incident, is being comforted by Grace, which leads to a kiss.
Yeah, they have a kiss on vibes.
I kind of wish we followed up with those characters.
Yeah.
That's the last we see of them.
That's it. Just like that really tender moment.
Yeah.
I like the framing of that shot because as they kiss, like on the right-hand corner is like a cross. Everyone in the picture is pretty religious. Like they're all church-going folks. So I just like the framing of that. And so we head back downstairs.
Mercury sound.
It's mob time.
They go nuts. This is where, I mean, you thought it was a wild party before, but now the party goes wild.
Yeah. It looks like Zion.
People are banging the walls.
Bumping into each other. They're dancing on the floor. They're taking off their clothes. They're swinging their dreads.
The crowd forms around the sound booth after this song ends, demanding that he play it back again.
This song is played three times. And like the energy just like does not fade. It stays at maximum level the whole time.
No, actually, I think the energy increases each time. He plays it again, and for the second time, all the fists go up at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then everyone's just bouncing. And there's this one guy on all fours, just pounding the floor with like his fists and his feet.
Yeah.
And then there's the mosh pit I talked about. And then the guy that was on the floor before now has to take off his shirt because he's just going so hard.
It's Reggie. Reggie ends up on the floor.
Oh, that was Reggie.
Reggie, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he ends up on the floor. I didn't recognize him with way less clothes. Yeah.
And then they demand Mercury Sound be played a third time. So now Reggie's on his back.
Yeah.
On the floor.
Yeah.
Dancing. It still qualifies totally as dancing.
Yeah, as like everyone is just like around him, like stomping around him, yelling, like cheering him on. Also just like doing their own thing and yelling. It's just like...
just party just shit. Just
energy, yeah.
Moment of silence for parties. Moment of
silence for parties.
And then
it's nostalgia at this point.
Yeah. Then there's a Rastafari chant. And that is the last thing we see of the party.
Yep.
Because we follow up with our friends who left the party now, Franklin and Martha.
I really like this shot. Just like
it's shot after shot. I like this shot, but this one is another genius one.
Yeah.
Brilliant. They're on a bike. But we don't see the bike.
No.
So it looks like they're floating.
Yeah. And it's like the trees and the light glimmering through the branches. It's a very romantic shot.
Yeah. If you didn't have that sound of the bike chain, you would think it was like the surreal moment that Steve was giving us of these characters floating.
But it does, I think... shows the whole picture and we see them on a bike.
Yeah, they came. Yeah. And there's the sound. Like, we know they're on the bike, but it's this. It's just this elevated emotion that takes over the composition of the.
They're floating.
The scene. Yeah.
They're floating. And so Franklin brings Martha to his place of work. And he works at a mechanic shop.
At the garage. Like, he takes the... He needs to put on music, of course. But I like that the... To play the music, he has to get the key of the car that's in the shop to turn on the car and play the...
Radio.
The CD on the radio.
Yeah. Offers her some tea.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it's Jamaican tea. Which is just like, what? He just, like, gave her some rum. Gave her some more liquor. And so, like, they start dancing again. They're having a good time. But that's interrupted by...
Busted.
Yeah, Franklin's boss enters. And he seems very cheery. But that's, I guess, underscored by something a little bit ominous that Franklin knows.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he pulls him aside and he's just like, hey, what's going on?
I will say it's... reasonable for the owner of a garage to be displeased that his employee is taking lovers there after hours.
Mm-hmm.
Unreasonable for him to be all up in his face with his finger so deep in his sternum as he's talking to him and then to call him boy.
To call him boy. He did. him boy. The party is officially over.
Yeah.
And so Martha... gives him a number, but not her house number. It's a phone box number that she will call, and then he has to be there at a certain time.
To receive the call.
To receive the call, because she can't have boys calling her house.
Mm-hmm.
And so she promises to call him, and he's like, all right, I'll be here. And so they have this long kiss, goodbye, almost missing the bus, and then she gets on the bus. There's this weird thing that happened. It almost felt like it almost felt like Atlanta, right? Like Atlanta had like the Muslim guy, like the bean pie guy, that was on the bus.
With the Nutella sandwich, that guy.
Yeah, with the Nutella sandwich. But in this one, it happens twice. There's a guy with a cross, and there's really no explanation for it. But
it's Sunday, we know. Sunday. And he's like assembling a cross.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know the context, but yeah, he's lifting it like over his back in like a very Jesus-y image.
Yeah. And we see him twice. We see him when Martha is going to the party, and then we see him when when she's going home as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
The shot of Martha when she's on the bus and the bus is leaving. She's just under the spell. It's just something I can relate to. Just if you've ever had those nights where it's like, oh, that was a night.
That was a night.
And then like you're finally alone, but you're still like, there's still like the aftershocks of what you experienced that evening, the joy.
Mm-hmm.
Just a great performance. It's all in her eyes and her smile and like her posture as she's like leaning forward. Even though she should be exhausted, she seems so full of energy.
Yeah. And so we see her now sneaking back into her house.
Yeah, the shot we see for that is the camera's focused on the cross on her bedroom wall. And then illuminated by the light, and like it's just perfectly done that it's like light through a window with the shadows. And then you see her shadow as she's moving into the room through the window. Gets under the covers in her dress.
Closes her eyes for a second.
And then knock, knock, knock.
Get up. It's time for church.
Because if you remember our Two Can Play That Game episode, the same girls are at the club on Saturday. They're at church on Sunday.
They are. I almost did a Two Can Play That Game quote for this. And then I thought you would do one. And then I thought that would be real funny.
And then we get a quote at the end, for all lovers and rockers.
Yeah. That's Lovers Rock.
That's it.
That's it.
Wow. This is just a thing that's there that we can just experience anytime. Just turn on and watch this party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great stuff.
Great stuff.
What were you going to say?
I was going to ask a question, and then I was just going to say it's a film. So is Lovers Rock a movie or a film, Nate?
It's a film.
Yeah, it's a film. It's just, it's a film. Yeah.
Another director would make that movie a movie.
Yeah.
But there's so much texture and detail.
And so much nuance.
Is depth and nuance.
Even though
it's a fucking party.
It's just one night. That's it.
Yeah.
It's
a great hangout movie.
The subject is so small.
Mm-hmm. But it's also so vast.
Yeah.
Because even though Martha is the main character and we learn a little bit about her, it's mostly just about what's happening in that house,
mm-hmm.
that community, letting go of whatever is going on in their lives, mm-hmm. to party.
Yeah.
And party very well.
Yeah. I need a party.
Just the sights and sounds and the foods and the dancing and the...
Yeah.
Just the moments and the way they're captured and presented. Also, the costumes are very good,
mm-hmm.
in this series and Lover's Rock specifically. Great stuff.
Great stuff.
It's a film. So, we are celebrating Black History Month here on Movie Film. You can expect more Black history in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Tweet us at Movie Film Pod if you have any complaints about things you thought were going to be happening that might not be happening anymore. Yeah. We can help you get over it.
Yeah.
Or watch Lover's Rock and you'll forget about it. Yeah. We should have said this at the beginning.
Yeah, just watch Lover's Rock.
Yeah. Lover's Rock is a film version of The Men in Black Neuralizer that will get you to forget all about Men in Black. I don't know. Email us, moviefilmpod@gmail.com for any inquiries. And tune in next week on Movie. Film.
Film!